would argue the reverse, that if they can tell their members that there's a possibility they might convert themselves into an industrial, they would say, you better maintain your membership, otherwise we might go away. So I don't really buy that argument. And I have to say that my instinctive reaction is that industrial jobs tend to be reasonably good, well-paying jobs. And I would suspect that from a jobs perspective, you wouldn't want to foreclose the possibility of turning a golf course into an industrial center, not to mention how many walks golf courses spoil.
So I'm a little concerned about discussing these two sites. It seems like we're getting into decision-making on zoning.
Close to making decisions on amendments here. So
yes.
The reason we want to get some discussion going is we have to prepare an updated EOA that takes into account some of the tentative possibilities. And so we want to, there's a few cases where you all have proposed competing amendments, and we don't want you to make a decision today, but we want you to talk about that enough so that we get the flavor of what we need to do for follow-up, if that makes sense.
Yeah, your summary says that we still have enough capacity. It narrows it, so I would be more comfortable waiting to make those decisions. I actually do have a question on the second list of amendments, the dispersed employment areas. Some of them are going from mixed employment to mixed use, and some the other way. But then on some of them, like the first two, the Rossi Farm going from mixed employment to mixed use apparently is -4.4, but then Kmart doing the exact same thing is 0. How is that?
It relates to the fact that these are not gross acres. These are acres in the employment analysis. So a particular site, the way we do the math in terms of adequacy of acres is some acres are constrained and discounted because they may have environmental resources, or they may be sloped, or they may have factors there. The reason Kmart is showing as 0 is because it's got development on it right now to the level that it's not actually showing up as a vacant site in our underutilized. So we may intuitively suspect it's underutilized, but just the cutoff that we established for what counts as formally underutilized, that site is falling slightly above it. It probably is going to create capacity, but the method that we used to document the numbers didn't quite capture it.
Well, let's check in on that for just a moment. And that is, are those criteria of our making, or are those state criteria?
Those are our making.
So a site that is massively overparked is underutilized, in my opinion, and our criteria should reflect that.
We the way that it worked in the EOA was that the criteria to determine whether something was underutilized takes into the economics into account of what is, it's inherently conservative because it's looking at what the market is currently doing and what is likely to occur. And so basically on a site like Kmart, what we're saying is the short-term prospect is it's not counting as unutilized land because the economy in that part of East Portland would not likely to produce something much denser at this point in time. We're being admittedly very conservative defensible.
So sort of bouncing off of Commissioner Saltzman's opinion about the golf courses, we need to make a case to ourselves and to the state that we have enough industrial land. So I would go back to that one. If we really don't think that that golf course is going to convert during the course of the plan, for whatever reason, then we shouldn't count it, right? If we don't think that's going to happen, or it's very unlikely to happen. On the other hand, we have a lot of underutilized, overparked real estate in the city, particularly in East Portland. My instincts say the likelihood of actual development on those sites is considerably greater than the likelihood of conversion of golf courses. So our criteria ought to reflect that, a site, and it's not just the Kmart, but the Kmart site's a class one, one-story building, cinder block construction, giant parking lot, never even full on Christmas. That's not the only place in Portland that fits that description. Those places seem to me, in many instances, particularly the larger ones, to be great prospects for redevelopment and more employment density. I think we can make that case to our fellow citizens in the, you know, these kind of lay people's terms, and I think we can make that case to DLCD. So I think we should be. Again, I don't want to play games with the industrial inventory. We ought to be real about this. But I think there's a strong feeling on the council that we can be real about this while still expecting significant redevelopment and densification of employment, because we're already seeing it in places like the Central East Side, you know, and not just there. So I'm concerned that we're being that conservative, Eric.
Yeah, I think we agree. It's just we're trying to establish a methodology that we can defend citywide, and I think we agree that site has some potential, but we also don't necessarily have the data or the economic analysis that would support us being too adventurous with those legal arguments in terms of our supply.
You know, there is a third option here, which is the metaphor would be you make a charitable deduction, but you don't claim it on your tax return.
Yeah.
So there is another option here, which is we look at the golf course. I don't have a strong feeling about the golf courses, but you make the change that's recommended, but you don't count it towards your total. So you're saying we want to be flexible, and at some point the golf courses may decide they want to go that route, so we want to do that now. But we're not claiming the credit for something that we know is not going to happen.
Yeah, and that's essentially our strategy. If we were to maintain the employment designation on the Kmart site, that's essentially what we're saying, is that we think there's a reason to do it, but we're just not claiming credit for it.
On the Kmart site, it's really the flavor of the jobs going from retail to, the light industrial middle wage jobs. And in the end, when you get down to the bottom and we've got to find room for 140,000 new jobs, a job's a job. And that's why in the EOA showing up as capacity, it's going from retail jobs to industrial jobs, light industrial jobs. And that's why it doesn't show up.
Looking at recent trends, looking at the growth of the distillery industry in the city, you know, that has been refilling some of the spaces in the Central East Side, that's to me an example of the kind of intensification of employment in craft, in areas where we've got lots of places in the city, 99th and Burnside, a lot of the 82nd corridor, the stuff along 17th, some of which is already mentioned here. There are a lot of places where we can create the environment where that kind of relatively small footprint, relatively high employment density, place where people make stuff, employment can happen, and the Kmart site may be one of those. So to me, it doesn't seem like a stretch if you look at what is going on in land prices and redevelopment for that kind of employment. It doesn't seem to me a stretch that we get more aggressive about counting. One, it's not just a debate with DLCD. It's also that we're trying to accommodate the kinds of employment growth that we want to see. And those are certainly, makerspace is one of them.
I think what we intended to do here was to stimulate some of the discussion we just had, and to point out when you do get to making decisions on this, there are a couple key sites that are in this list that you all have potentially competing amendments that we want to make sure that there's that fact base behind the decision making. And so we're available and continue to be available over the coming weeks as we get into the hearing to discuss those. The golf course is one area where you've potentially got slightly different takes on it. The Kmart is another one where you've got some potentially competing directions out there. So we want to, and some of them we just don't know where you are because we haven't talked to all of you about it. So that, which is fine at this stage. There are a few in this list, Pepsi and Adidas being examples where, as we've gotten into the mixed use zoning, and refined that, we have started to realize that there's a couple of those sites that would make more sense as employment, and so that stimulated our recommendations to the mayor that those be added to the list. And that's a reflection of, if you recall the history of our mixed-use zones, the EX zone started out as an employment zone, and through a variety of refinements over the years, it turned into the Pearl District zone, which is primarily about housing now. But there are some legacy employment sites that still have EX and aren't intending to change to housing anytime soon. And so as we shift over to the new mixed-use framework of the new zones, some of those sites are more appropriately returned to the employment designation, I think, because they have no immediate or longer-term even interests in converting. And so some of those are, Adidas in particular struck us as there's no reason we need to encourage change there other than to continued investment in the jobs. So that just reflects refinement of the map as we've learned more in the mixed-use work.
Just to tag on that last point. So the Adidas campus, I mean, what if they wanted to provide housing at some point for people who work there? Would they not be allowed to under the mixed employment zone?
Correct. But I mean, we've had discussions with Adidas and their facility manager and trying to figure out what the best fit is. And based on those discussions, we think the mixed employment is the better designation for what they want, and we can provide more insight into those discussions and how we arrived at that.
Yeah, I mean, I just picked that last example, yeah. But there's several other examples you flagged for us where I guess I would ask that same question. I mean,
in most of those,
rule out housing
in most of those cases, there's an adequate supply of mixed use zoning across the street and next door, so that we're not too worried about the possibility of housing serving that employer.
So when are we going to talk about the medium forecast and the language on West Hayden Island? Is that another work session?
At this point, the language we've circulated,
I think, some initial draft language to folks on the EOA and how we describe its relationship to West Hayden Island. So at this point, we were not planning on having another work session on that. That's just a matter of voting on the language and having one-on-one conversations about that.
Okay, and then an email that I have says that the comprehensive plan calls for frequent reevaluation of demand. The EOA updates every 5 to 7 years. Is that required by the state?
Not necessarily, but we're proposing that because our land supply is tight, and because we think that benefits us over the long run. If you look backwards in time and use the residential analogy, it used to be much harder for us to document residential infill, and so we had a really conservative buildable lands inventory on the residential side all the way up through the 90s and into the 2000s. And we're now able to claim more credit on those underutilized lands because we have a history of denser infill. So moving forward, we think a regular update is to our advantage because we're seeing more and more of these multi-story employment uses, and we're going to be able to document more of that, which helps our land supply rather than harms it.
So I'll want to have some more conversations with you on that. I think no future council member wants to continue doing this every 5 years. It seems like Prometheus pushing the rock up the hill.
The last item on today's agenda was just to remind you of next steps and do a little Q&A if necessary on how that's going to work. On the back of your agenda, there's a list of the key dates, which I think Joe mentioned at the beginning. Sometime in the next few weeks, we're intending to publish a document that has the actual maps of the sites that you all have nominated for potential change, and also has language on the policies that you've discussed with us. That will be the basis of a hearing on the 14th and the 20th. It doesn't mean you can't amend your amendment after that, but we wanted to establish a stable point to which to base the hearing on. So that's our next step.
And I was going to suggest that we might want to set a date for when we propose amendments to amendments.
Yeah, and I'll so April 28th was the tentative date for where we actually bundle up the amendments and go through the voting on those different bundles, some of which will be non-controversial consent lists, and others might be individual votes because you all might have different points to make. And then May 25th and the 15th are the dates where we actually try and wrap this up in terms of adoption of findings and the final voting of the as amended plan. But the mayor, I think, wanted to make a few points about how we handle the, after we've heard testimony on your initial collection of amendments, then what do we do?
Right, well, we want to make sure we're transparent about that, and we don't agree, and we will have split votes on some of these issues. That's fine, that's good. So I was going to suggest that we ought to set a date somewhere between the 20th and the 28th, maybe the 22nd, where we say, if you've got an amendment to the amendments, put it on the table so we can the rest of us can evaluate it, and so we can get it out there in public discussion.
Mayor, I really applaud that, and I hope we consider that a directive, because having participated in some really great processes on this council where we've had literally dozens and dozens of amendments, and staff has done a great job framing them, and we've tried to debate them, and the public's tried to follow along, it just seems to me that we're now at a point where if we don't follow that guidance, everyone's going to be confused on Judgment Day.
Right.
And so by putting out amendments to amendments a number of days before, your colleagues come in better prepared, the public can follow what's going on, and I hope we're faithful to that, because I think it would be a great refinement of our policy.
Anyone have a concern about that approach?
No, actually, I do have a concern about something else, though, which I just realized. I'm going to be out of the country on May 25th.
Well, we can figure out how to divide that. So, hearing no dissent, I am going to set April 22nd as the...
What day of the week is that?
Good question.
Saturday?
And while you're looking it up, I'm hereby canceling all leave for everybody in my office for the 2 weeks between the 14th and the 28th.
Friday, April 22nd, as the date. At 5 p.m. Friday on April 22nd, we should put our amendments to the amendments on the table.
A question on that. Is anybody going to be looking at them over the weekend, or could we make it 8 o'clock on Monday?
Sure, we can make it. That makes it the 24th, 25th. So then that's 3 days before the hearing.
Well, the hearing is the 14th and the 20th. And
okay,
then.
All right, sorry.
The vote is 3 days before the votes.
It's amendments to amendments, so I think that's manageable.
It really is a question as to whether others are going to be working on it over the weekend, or whether those who might need more than 2 days between.
I'm sensitive to that. Yeah,
well, I'm also not going to go on vacation those 3 days. So.
I don't think anyone is. All right, Monday morning, 9 a.m. Monday morning on the 25th.
Mayor, there is one other important piece of business we have to do, but I'm reminded that we're not allowed to make any decisions, but. I have been keeping track at attendance at these comp plan hearings, the public hearings, the work sessions, and the coveted Netacovan Award, which will go to the person with the best attendance record. I believe the Rossies may be firmly in the lead. I noticed there's some lawyers who've been joining us regularly. They have some catching up to do. But we can't make any decision today, but I think they are probably the prohibitive front runner.
But let's go back to Steve's question also about you're going to be gone on the 25th of May, and what we're doing then is vote first, findings second, right?
Votes on the amendments to determine, to establish what the as amended plan is, and the reason we have a month of waiting.
That's on the
21st. Yeah, it's actually the findings first, and then the final vote second.
Oh, all right, so... You'll be missing the vote on the findings.
Is that okay?
Probably.
Yeah. I think that's
practically, if we're split 2-2, which I don't think is going to happen, the mayor's probably going to set that over a weekend.
Right. Yeah, that's probably not going to happen. Exactly. I wouldn't expect that.
Just as a side issue, just for mythological accuracy, Commissioner Fritz, So Sisyphus was a guy pushing the rock up the hill, and it was Prometheus was chained to a rock and having his liver eaten daily, which I don't think even the worst comp plan proceeding compares to.
Yeah, but you had to look that up, right? So I was hoping that nobody would notice, because as soon as I said her, I knew Sisyphus.
I had to look up the liver part to make sure I had that right.
Are there any other questions about process?
On that note, let's hope the comp plan process never feels like that.
And I just want to remind you, because it's my goal to get this report out in the next week or two, this is the important week for you all to be reconciling language suggestions with BPS staff so that we're clear on what your amendments actually are. We're pretty good about that. I know there's a few other meetings this week, but I just want to emphasize that point.
Great. Well, another good discussion. Hope these work sessions have been helpful for all of you. It have been for me, and I just want to thank the BPS staff and their support team and other bureaus for really getting the council to a level of understanding here of the decisions in front of us. So thank you.
And Mayor, I also want to say they're going above and beyond. The staff scheduled a boot camp with me last week, and we did a couple hours of a deep dive in my office, and my staff and I really appreciated that chance to do a focused tutorial on some of the endgame issues. So thanks for your good work.
Thank you all very much. This is